Mold is a common household nuisance. It can appear on shower curtains and in damp basements and on aging foods in the refrigerator. But it's also become a major concern in the aftermath of flooding caused by Sandy. For this week's Please Explain segment, we are finding out all about mold and how to eliminate it. We are joined by industrial hygienist and environmental health expert Monona Russell. She's also the author most recently of the book Pick Your Poison. And also joining us is microbiologist Chin Yang of Prestige Enviromicrobiology. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're inviting our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call with your questions about mold at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment or question on our show page at WNYC.org. So, Monona, let's get very basic. What is mold?
Well, you can think of it as a little tiny plant without chlorophyll. And it grows and it gives off spores that get into the air. Little bits, pieces break off also when it gets dry and dies. And that's my issue because people are trying to avoid this material with respirators and so on right now. And you need to know what this looks like and what will protect you.
Can it grow on anything?
Oh, just about. It doesn't need much food. The main thing it needs is the right humidity and temperature. And the amount of food it needs is really, really small.
And when we say molds, we're talking about how many? Do we know?
Probably a million, I guess. It's just there's so many different species and they never have found them all.
Chin, what role do molds play in the formation of a cheese? I'm trying to think positively for a moment.
Yeah, there are a few species of penicillin known to produce cheese. For example, Penicillin roqueforti, it's the penicillin responsible for the production of Roquefort cheese, for example.
And so there are different molds that will do different things. Sometimes we like what they do, sometimes we don't. But, okay, so you have this Roquefort cheese in your refrigerator, and three weeks later you look at it and it's all covered with mold, and you thought, where did that mold come from?
Yes, I think in the case of cheese, that the cheese is purposely inoculated with the penicillin spores for the production. On the other hand, if we have orange become moldy in a refrigerator, usually the spores come from the air or come with the orange, and they germinate and grow into colony and make our orange or grapefruits become spoiled.
And then they go after breads. They love dairy products, don't they?
They love dairy product and they love everything organic and nature. Basically, it's like anything else, more evolved with nature, and they, some of them even evolve with us.
Now, Monona, most people have probably experienced mildew in their showers. Is mildew a form of mold?
Yeah, they're in the same category.
And where does that come from?
Well, we're probably breathing some mold right now. I mean, there's almost no place you can't set a Petri dish and culture mold.
You could just leave the Petri dish there.
Just anywhere.
And then
leave it.
Mold will eventually find its way onto the dish.
Yeah.
This is kind of like Higgs boson and and dark matter and all of that. But mold is spores that are just floating all around. They're invisible.
Yeah, basically. Obviously, if you look under a microscope, you can see them, but the naked eye is not going to see those mold spores.
Now, Chin, if there's mold on an end of bread or cheese, can you just cut it off and eat the rest safely? This is a question that millions of people want to know the answer to.
Well, in general, it's not recommended. For example, the reason is that when it's visible, that also means they are fungal structure invisible, already penetrating and advancing outside of the visible colony.
It sends kind of roots into the rest of the cheese that we're not seeing?
Yeah, I think you use a very good term, the roots. It's essential, very similar to the roots of a tree. They actually penetrate into the blade, or they penetrate into a piece of water-damaged drywall, for example.
But if I eat cheese that has those roots in it, it's not going to make me sick, is it?
No, in general, because it has been studied, you know, particularly in Europe, they know some of these penicillium involved in the production of cheese do not produce a lot of those what we call secondary metabolites or toxins. They produce a small amount, but it's within our body tolerance.
There are other toxic molds, aren't there, Monona? I mean, more seriously toxic molds?
Yes. Well, see, because they're like plants, they also make odors like plants because they're metabolizing their food and they're dealing with their moisture and the temperature that they're at. So that odor that you smell is actually like their sweat, their metabolic processes, and some of those are also toxic. That's another reason not to eat the bread, because some of that is going to be in the package along with everything else.
Well, is this similar to what happens with mushrooms, where some mushrooms are wonderful to eat and then other ones can be terribly toxic?
Absolutely, a good analogy.
But mushrooms are not, they come from spores, but they're not molds?
Well, they're very organized. You think of them as monster molds.
Chen, is that how you would describe a mushroom? A monster mold?
Well, mushroom, it's a totally separate group from the typical mold. Mm-hmm. Mushroom does produce a face when they grow vegetatively. In some way, on petri dish, they look like mold. And the mushroom itself actually is the fruiting body or reproductive structure of the mushroom. Now, the typical mold, they tend to be more associated with another group, what we call cup fungi or ascomycetes. And they grow fluffy, produce all these structure and different colors. But they do produce sexual reproduction or reproductive structure. For example, truffle is in that group.
Truffles, which are much valued and incredibly expensive.
That's correct.
Well, if I could figure out how to produce them myself, I'd probably make a lot of money, wouldn't I? My guests are microbiologist Chin Yang and environmental health expert and industrial hygienist Monona Russell. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and a reminder that you can join in the conversation by giving us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Jim, what about penicillin? Doesn't it also come from mold?
Yes, penicillin, the antibiotics, actually come from the genus of mold called Penicillium. And specifically, there's a couple of species produce that group of antibiotics. The most well-known and mostly commonly used in the pharmaceutical industry is called Penicillium notatum, which is an older name. The new name is called Penicillium quisaginum.
Now, why would some molds act as antibiotics? Do molds feed on bacteria?
Well, the theory is that some mold produce certain chemicals that as a competitive advantage. It's in a way of a mold's biological weapon against bacteria and some of them even against other species of mold or fungi.
Monona, is sunlight good or bad for mold?
Bad. UV, ultraviolet rays really don't work well with mold, and neither does air movement. So getting the sun and the air movement into your space, if there's a danger of mold taking over, is a really good idea.
So if you have a bathroom that has a window that gets a lot of sun, you're less likely to have a mold problem?
Yeah.
Does mold beget more mold? Because does it just keep on creating new spores all the time?
As long as it can grow, it's going to keep producing spores. And then those spores are going to be settling around, and they can set up more little colonies if they find a place where there's enough food.
Now, Jim, what about hot and cold? Do they do better in hot climates?
Again, molds, it's very similar to humans. Some people like in the tropics, like in, for example, move down to Florida. But some people like to ski and in a cold temperature. So they do tolerate a wide range of temperature For example, there's a species called Aspergillus fumigatus, which was involved in the recent outbreak of fungal meningitis. Actually, it can grow at a temperature up to 55 degrees Celsius. On the other hand, there's a mold can grow at a freezing temperature, and some, for example, Cladosporium can grow at a near-freezing temperature, 32 degrees Fahrenheit, for example.
Yeah, well, you have proof of that in your refrigerator. They'll grow.
Well, Marcy from the Bronx is calling with a Sandy-related problem. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well. Are you having a serious mold problem?
Well, I don't know how serious it is. My house was flooded. The floors went under. They're wood floors. And I thought, I don't have any insulation under them. It's an old house. There's just the planks, the subflooring, which is planks, no plywood, and then the boards on top. But then there's black spots that are growing in the floors, and I thought it was stained from the nails, but it's not. I was told it was mold, and you poke them with a knife, and they're softer than the rest of the flooring, and one of the people told me it was mold. And I don't know whether I have to rip them out. I have a crawl space under the house, which does have holes. It's ventilated. I don't know whether I have to rip out the floors and or if I can just pour something like bleach on them. I was told maybe the bleach will go right all the way through the wood. Or there's another chemical called Microban, which is a bacteria that eats the mold. I was just wondering what maybe I should do. Would I have to leave the house, or is this a dangerous kind of mold, or is it what they call wet rot?
You want to tackle that, Monona?
Yeah, she's going to need somebody to really come in and assess it from one of these companies. I'm fortunate in that the reports I'm looking at are primarily from film locations, shooting areas, sound stages and stuff, because that's part of what I do. And whenever anything's been wet like your floor is, it's trash as far as we're concerned. But there are ways of saving things, and somebody who is really into this field is going to have to come in and assess that.
Now, Chen, some years ago, there was a fire in my apartment, and mold formed, and the fireman said to me, ammonia and dishwashing detergent. That's what they just kept on saying that. Mix them together. Is that a good way of treating mold?
No, there are a couple of things. First of all, ammonia at a low concentration, actually it's a very good nitrogen source for some mold species to grow on.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, when you mix ammonia with certain chemical, actually will release the ammonium gas, which is irritating and to a certain degree even toxic.
So I almost killed myself. but the mold did go away.
Well, because it's probably changed the pH. And if you use concentration high enough, sometimes it does have less desiccation or toxic effect to mold growth.
Now,
but in general, it's not recommended.
So in Marcy's case, she's seeing this mold, but there's a chance that she might not even see mold, but still smell it?
Yes. It's, you know, when you got water damage like Sandy, usually you not only have mold growth, but you also have bacterial growth.
That's right.
And in fact, if we go to EPA's website, there are some EPA documents tell us that anything you got water damage, if we cannot dry in 24 hours, porous materials such as carpet should be considered replaced.
Yeah.
So microbiologically, 24 hours, 48 hours, is kind of the critical threshold for microbiological growth and amplification.
And especially because Sandy wasn't just water. It had a lot of sewage, oil, all kinds of runoff from streets. I mean, it's filthy. One of the
and
ways...
And do the molds feed off of all of that?
Oh, yeah. And the bacteria. You've seeded it with both bacteria and mold. The reports I'm looking at, you know, they do wipe samples for the E. coli bacteria to see how high the water actually got.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's no simple answer in killing mold?
The simple answer is the one that both Dr. Yang and I have been giving you, and that is that if it's been wet for 24 hours, really, it's probably trash.
You just have to, if it's your wall, you have to
cut it out. You really do. And that's what we're doing in all of these locations that we're trying to rehabilitate. However, I also deal with MoMA, and those people are worried about artifacts and important art items that have gotten wet. And so there are conservators. There are people who will deal with this. And I think you're going to do a program tomorrow.
Well, Saturday. We'll be back next week. But a lot of art galleries in Chelsea affected by Sandy, and artworks were, I don't know whether they were inundated with water or whether just simply being in that moist environment would cause them trouble. But in either case, are they in serious danger?
Oh, yes. It's a big problem. But there is nothing you can't conserve if it's something that is an object, because there are ways. But it's not cheap and it's not easy. And the artifact will always be more likely to mold. If it's a building material, really the best thing to do is to get it out.
Chen, what about carpeting? Do you need to just tear it out and replace it?
Yeah, I think that the typical carpeting, if it's soaked in water for 24 hours and has no chance of drying quickly, I think the best policy is just replace them.
Go ahead.
And just to follow up, I think, you know, talking about the valuable artifacts, the arts, the painting, actually in the 1960s, the Florence, Italian city, got water damage. And a lot of those valuable painting, they actually can preserve it by drying using antibiotics. They use antibiotic powder to just pour onto this painting, and the powder absorbs the moisture as well as serving as antibiotic against any mold growth.
So they use antibiotics, which come from mold, to kill mold.
No, actually, the antibiotic they use actually came from actinomycetes. Actually, the antibiotic's name is called nystatin, which is discovered by New York State Laboratory. That's where nystatin NY come from. Mm-hmm. And it's a powder. So they use the powder pour onto this water damaged painting. So the powder will help remove the moisture, but the antibiotic also serves as antibiotic to prevent mold growth.
When you're cleaning mold, should you wear rubber gloves and a mask?
Yeah, you probably should. The difficulty that we have is that if people aren't properly trained to wear a mask, there's a 60% chance from the studies I've seen that it isn't going to be really working well. You have to understand how to fit it tightly to the face. You can't have any facial hair. There's a lot, and the mask needs to be thrown away within 8 hours. So you really need to buy a box of them.
So people whose houses have been seriously affected by Sandy and who can expect to see a lot of mold, can they stay in those places for any extended period of time?
Well, it depends on the individual. If that individual already is an asthmatic or has problems with mold, no, they shouldn't be doing any of that work. They need to hire it done. But if they're healthy and they get some help on getting that respirator fit, you should be able to tolerate some minor cleanup, not the big heavy. If you walk in and there's fur growing, you need to get a professional.
We're talking about molds on today's Please Explain with industrial hygienist and environmental health expert Manona Russell, whose most recent book is Pick Your Poison. Also with us is microbiologist Chin Yang of Prestige Enviromicrobiology. And our number here is 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we'll be back with your calls and your comments right after this. And we are back with our guests talking about mold on today's Please Explain, microbiologist Chin Yang of Prestige Enviromicrobiology and Manona Russell, the industrial hygienist and environmental health expert who has made quite a few appearances on the show over the years. She's the author most recently of a book called Pick Your Poison, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Bob from Rico Park. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Leonard, how you doing today?
We're okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, Leonard, my question is this. Great show, by the way. I had a 50-gallon tank of water in my basement that ruptured. My carpets got wet. It's fairly dry now. It did last over 24 hours for a couple of days. I kept on drying it. Is it dangerous, even though it's fairly dry? Can I keep that carpet, or do I have to get rid of it?
My advice is to get rid of it for the reason that even if it manages to stay fairly mold-free during the winter when the humidity is low, my guess is when the temperature gets warmer and the humidity rises in the summer, you're going to have a problem. And so we really do advise when it's been that wet that long that you just get rid of it.
Okay, thank you for your call. A number of listeners have called in wondering whether they can eat a cheese like Roquefort if they're allergic to penicillin. Chin?
Well, I think a couple of things. The first thing is I would suggest them to talk to their doctor, physicians first. Mm-hmm. And also depends on what kind of mold they are allergic to, because there's a wide variety of mold.
Well, they said they're allergic to penicillin.
Oh, you
which
mean
is
the
not
antibiotics?
Yes.
No, from my understanding is there's no direct correlation.
Mm-hmm. So the penicillin-like mold that creates cheeses is not totally related to the penicillin that we take as an antibiotic?
Well, they are not related not directly related, but they are in the same genus. But the species produced the penicillin antibiotic is Penicillin notatum or Penicillin quercetinum, which is not involved in the production of cheese.
Max from Manhattan asks, what's the best humidity and temperature to prevent mold? And he also asks, what's the best way to clean it?
Okay, when we are planning galleries and museums, we really try to keep that humidity in a particular range. It depends on what we're working with, but the humidity needs to be reasonably low, but warm and, you know, good enough for people. If we had our way, we would have the humidity very low. But you have to look at what is comfortable for people somewhere around 50.
Dehumidifier?
A dehumidifier if there's any problem with it. But if you have a good climate-controlled ventilation system with a good engineer that set it up, you can control that. For instance, we have a book repository for the Ben Franklin collection in Harrison. And there we keep the temperature within 2 degrees and the humidity within 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, bathrooms often have mold. Having a little window, you can't always
that
do it.
That helps, but you know you're going to have periods of extremely high humidity in a bathroom. So you really just want to be able to get rid of it, because you're going to see the little black lines in the tiles now and then. There's just not going to be able to get rid of it.
Well, are those black lines going to cause us any health problems?
Not really, no.
Still, they're ugly. So how do I get rid of them? Just buy one of those commercial cleaners?
Those commercial cleaners will work well. If you have a really bad problem with mold, there is one high type solution that will do it, and it will also be good for bacteria. It'll do anything, and that's 1-10 bleach.
What is 1-10 bleach?
You take one cup of bleach and you add 10 cups of water, and you now have a mixture that will take out just about anything on a hard surface.
But won't it also discolor things?
Oh, sure.
Oh, so yeah. it'll bleach it.
Yeah, and it's
good if the mold is on something white.
Well, or if, you know, any hard surface that has been contacted with sandy water has got all kinds of schmutz in it. That's a technical term, schmutz.
You need
something that's really going to clean it off.
I've also been told that if you have a recurring mild mold problem, you can paint the area over with a metallic paint, and then when you paint over that, the mold doesn't come back.
Well, usually that works, and they have some with some pretty strong biocides in it. There used to be a paint called Kilz, K-I-L-Z. I don't know if it's still on the market. I haven't looked recently, but that worked fairly well.
Mm-hmm. So there are paints that have moldicides,
yes,
in them?
Mildewcides.
Mildewcides,
yes.
Arabella from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, I have two small children, and I'm always looking for water bottles and carrying around water bottles, and it's quite complicated. I mean, some of them, you know, they're quite expensive, and they're supposed to be great, but they have this straw, and quite quickly, there's like this gray kind of mold that starts forming in the straw, and it's very difficult to clean that. And I'm just wondering if it's dangerous for my children to, I mean, drink through that, or if I have to just keep throwing them away, and how I can clean them.
Yeah, I think you need to throw them away fairly frequently, because anytime you have something associated, especially with children whose hands are not always perfectly clean either, sooner or later there are things growing there.
Well, if it's a water bottle that develops a little mold on around the cap area, can't you just put it in a dishwater?
Well, if it's a hard surface,
could
it's
you put
no
it
problem.
On a dishwater?
Yeah, sure. It'll wash
won't
right.
Won't that hot water kill it?
Yes, but if it's straw, if she's got one of these woven straw things, there's a lot of places where those little root-like things that we were talking about can get in and be hard to get rid of.
Thank you for calling us, Arabelle.
Thank you.
Janet, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm wondering about a house that I have in wetlands, and I know that we can get it treated, but because it's in wetlands and there's a high water table, will the mold continue to return, or can we get it cleaned permanently?
No, there's no permanent. As soon as the right conditions come back, the molds are in the air, they can land from anywhere, they can start up anytime you have the right conditions.
Well, thank you very much for your answer, and thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Beth from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have a similar problem to all of these people. There's a spot of mold that I noticed in my Florida home that's right near the air conditioner on the ceiling, near the grate. It's a central air conditioner. And it's about the size of a quarter, and I was very alarmed by this. I'm going back tomorrow, and if it's still there, which I imagine it is, what can I do to get rid of it?
Well, it's likely to still be there if it was there before,
sure.
Isn't it?
It's not going to get up and walk away. And nobody was ever really put in danger by a quarter size piece of mold, no matter what kind it is.
But will it have grown since you came north and abandoned it in Florida?
Yeah. What I'd be more concerned about is what is going on in the central air conditioning, because sometimes, especially in Florida, the ductwork becomes a huge, long, complicated mold garden. And it is putting out spores. You need to have somebody, you know, check the ducts every now and then, and those systems need maintenance.
If there's a mold problem in an apartment, is it the landlord's responsibility to make sure the source of the problem is fixed and the mold is eliminated?
It depends on your contract, but usually, yes.
Now, Chin, a listener asks, Lucy from Manhattan, is there a difference between green, brown, and black mold that grows in the shower?
Yeah, usually it's different color means they're probably different species. But on the other hand, the best estimate is about roughly half a million species of various type of fungi and mold. So it means three different colors can include over 100 species each color. So there's all kind of different possibility. I think the key is that if those surfaces have exposure to moisture, means whatever develop are probably mold, so that need to be addressed. And usually, in addition to treatment, the best way to deal with it is to control the moisture.
Uh-huh. Well, that means, as a friend had to do, tearing out the whole bathroom and having a ventilation fan installed if they don't have a window?
I think the key really is need to figure out why the mold grows there, whether there was a condensation problem or there's a leak issues. Then you can get rid of the moldy material as well to address the fundamental issue. Otherwise, you spend the money, get rid of the moldy material, put in new material, but then mold will come back soon.
Now, does it matter what the color is? Should I be more concerned if the color is green or brown or black?
In general, for more for remediation cleanup purpose, no. If someone have health issues and develop symptoms, then maybe a good idea to figure out what they are.
A caller also wonders, can mold grow on your body?
Yes, we know there are some fungi can grow, causing, for example, athlete foods, feet are caused by certain type of mold. And some certain type of mold can also cause infection. For example, a recent outbreak of fungal meningitis is caused by certain fungal species or mold species.
Now, some people will walk around in the gym and come away with athlete's foot, and others won't. Does that mean that there are also in our own bodies certain things that will prevent molds from growing?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That means, you know, everybody have a different immune system.
Uh-huh.
So some people are more naturally resist to more infection, but some may be more susceptible. And RBS also depends on the immune status of our body.
And it also depends on how dry you keep your feet. Mm. If your feet really, really get dry a lot because you don't wear shoes, for example, the chances of getting athlete's foot diminish greatly. It's when you stick it in that shoe and let it get all sweaty and stay
I wish
that
my
way.
Mother had known that when I kept on walking around barefoot and she'd say, put your shoes on. Chris from Great Neck High, you're on the air.
Hi.
And you got to make it very quick, Chris.
Okay, I had a mold problem about 15 years ago that was due to a broken vent pipe that we did deal with. But in that room, every once in a while, I smell this, I get this whiff, this odor of, it smells to me like something organic is dying.
And then it goes
away, and then it comes back again. And I don't know what to do, how to sort of track down what to do about it.
Now, wouldn't the mold just continually create a smell, or do they ever
Well, it has to be growing to do that. So if you'd have to find a place where there was something, an active colony functioning, and it doesn't sound like there is one. So maybe it's something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're sorry we couldn't get to more of the calls, but we have a list of mold resources on our website at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to our guests today who have really answered some incredible questions on our Please Explain Look at Mold. Monona Russell, her latest book is Pick Your Poison, and microbiologist Chin Yang of Prestige Enviro Microbiology. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It was a delight.
Thank you for having me.
And,
stay dry.
I hope there's no mold here.